This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Of course, the story that is on everyone's mind is the coronavirus and COVID-19. President Trump spoke to the nation last night. Here in Ohio, Governor DeWine is taking steps each and every day to limit large gatherings and visits to nursing homes and to everything else. But in case you have forgotten, we have a presidential race that is continuing today and continuing this week. Ohio's primary is 5 days away, St. Patrick's Day next week. Ohio, Florida, and a few other states, big primary states coming up. And joining us to talk about politics in this age of coronavirus is Ken Rudin, the political junkie, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Ken, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you, Mike, and I hope Ann is okay. Yes, nothing to be concerned about?
Yes, a little under the weather, but not coronavirus, as far as we know.
I'm not making jokes. I always get nervous because this is scary times.
Yeah, she hopes to be back tomorrow.
We hope.
She's doing fine. She just has a cough and wants to give her throat a rest. So that's why I'm here. But we're glad you're here. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine, probably better than Bernie Sanders is feeling right now.
All right. We'll get to Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden in a moment. But, of course, we don't want to mix politics and pandemics too much. But because our political leaders are in charge of making decisions on how we deal with pandemics, we have to talk a little bit about how those politicians are handling this outbreak and this crisis. Of course, last night, a very somber President Trump spoke to the nation from the Oval Office. He laid out what the federal government is trying to do to limit the spread of the coronavirus, trying to limit the damage it is doing to the economy. Among the things he proposed was limiting travel.
To keep new cases from entering our shores, we will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days.
There was President Trump speaking last night from the Oval Office, also said that he would like to have the Small Business Administration offer more loans to small businesses, tie them through this, advise folks to perhaps stay away from nursing homes, also said he would like to see a payroll tax. Democrats are looking for help for hourly workers who don't have sick time and tax breaks for them, tax credits for them, so they can not suffer the consequences should they get sick and have to stay home. Ken Rudin, what did you think of the president's address last night?
Well, you know, Mike, you just said earlier in the introduction, you said that we probably should not be combining or mixing politics with this coronavirus. But the fact is, and the president said last night in his address, he said there's no time for partisanship, no time for politics. But to be fair, and I don't need to point this out, but the president and his Republican allies have been saying for weeks now that this coronavirus is just hyped up by Democrats to hurt the president. You saw Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida during the debate on the funding for the coronavirus. He came on the floor wearing a gas mask, showing how the fact that he was mocking the whole proceedings. The president's former acting White House chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, was at CPAC, I guess, a week or so ago, and he said that really the coronavirus was, you know, used by Democrats to hurt the president. Now, the president was very somber last night.
Let's point out the irony there, Ken. It turns out that coronavirus was at CPAC, and that congressman, sadly, lost one of his constituents to the disease, and he is self-quarantining himself right now, correct?
That is very important. Matt Gaetz was mocking it, and then a few days later, somebody in his Northwest Florida district did pass away from the virus. And you have people like Rush Limbaugh and Hannity on Fox News saying that this is overblown. And I know a lot of people who are Trump supporters who do feel this is being overblown by the media. And that is scary because if people are minimizing the risk and it turns out to be the serious pandemic that the World Health Organization says it is, then they're making a serious, if perhaps a fatal mistake. So while the president seemed reassuring last night, saying, let's not talk about politics, just a day or so before, he was saying, well, you know, when he was down, first of all, when he was down at the CDC in Atlanta, he was wearing his Keep America Great hat as if it was a campaign stop. He talked about what a great job he was doing. He was talking about a great job that everybody who wants vaccines are getting it, but they're not getting it. And so while a lot of people look to the president for leadership I mean, you know, you always think of Ronald Reagan during the Challenger explosion, or Bill Clinton during Oklahoma City, or George W. Bush during 9/11. You look to the president for leadership and empathy. And for the most part, you don't get that for this president, because he's just not known for being emotional when it comes to that. And it's really all about politics. So I'd look, yes, we should curtail travel from Europe, but why is the United Kingdom not covered? Why are other countries, like Australia, we pointed out, you heard during the newscast that Tom Hanks and his wife Rita Wilson have coronavirus in Australia. Why isn't travel from Australia banned? So there's just so many things that just didn't click, and it's scary, because the American people more than ever need to believe in somebody and have trust in the government.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. He's a big favorite here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 614-292-8513, and our email is allsides@wosu.org. Democrats, are they skirting up against the line, crossing the line, and gaining political points on this as well?
Well, you know something, I have seen snarky comments on social media almost mocking the fact that several Republicans who are at CPAC have self-quarantined. It's Matt Gaetz. It's also, I think it was Jim Jordan as well. I know there's another congressman. Oh, I'm sorry, Doug Collins of Georgia, who is running for the Senate. And then, you know, so and there's a mocking feel of it, like they deserve it. That is equally as ugly, if not more ugly. So you have to watch out for that. But Democrats, I think, for the most part, in Congress, have been warning about this for a long time. They've been accused of being alarmist, or if not that, they've been accused of trying to sabotage the president's reelection. And basically, look, the president's reelection was based on two things. One, that the Democrats would put up some left-wing guy like, oh, maybe Bernie Sanders or somebody like that. The economy, you know, the economy that was doing so well, and it has been doing so well. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the economy is going to continue to tank. I'm not going to say that the Dow is going to continue to slide. I mean, November is a long time. It's only 236 days to Election Day, but that's still a long time. 2 weeks is a long time. Look, 2 weeks ago, we were writing Joe Biden's political obituary. So things do change in a jiff, but Democrats have to be very careful not to seem to be gloating. Look, I don't think they're gloating at all, but they shouldn't become a Democrat versus Republican issue. It should be a public health issue, which it is.
Yeah, it is just in this. It's always hard to keep politics out, but right now,
especially
difficult to keep the politics out of this, because we're looking at everything through this, are you for Trump or against Trump lens.
Right.
Looking at what might happen politically. Donald Trump wants a payroll tax cut. Democrats and even a lot of Republicans say that's not the answer to soothing economic fears.
Well, I mean, the Republicans keep talking. The president keeps talking about tax cuts as if that's the be all end all thing for what is ailing the economy. And the fact is, there are a lot of people who just can't afford to be with. It's not a tax cut for industry. It should be a boost for the workers who are losing. I mean, small businesses, of course, are losing a fortune because of this. There are people who can't go to work, or either told not to go to work, or it's risky to go to work. And if you don't go to work, you don't get paid. So there are a lot of people who are suffering from this. And again, you know, I'd love to see what the debate looks like in the House and the Senate when the debates begin. But my goodness, this is not the time to be talking about D's versus R's.
Yeah. But you expect Congress to do something to help the economy.
Because they have to.
Dow is down 7% again today. So obviously Wall Street didn't take a lot of solace from what the president said yesterday.
There are so many millions of people who have not, if they're not affected by the disease itself, they're affected by the economic ramifications of the disease, and you know, something has to be done, and you need more than a president's speech to say that everything's okay. I mean, when he was at the CDC, the president was saying, well, first of all, everybody who wants a vaccine can get one, which is not true, and second of all, he said
Australia.
That it's really...
or not vaccine. I guess they can get a test in Australia. The vaccine's not available for a year, I guess. So,
right. I mean, if you listen to what the president has to say and you listen to what Dr. Anthony Fauci has to say of the Center for Disease Control, it is stark differences. And that's the scary part at all, because, again, as I said earlier, more than ever, we need somebody in the government or somebody, some public official to believe in. And when the government, when the White House is contradicting his own health officials, then you know we're in big trouble.
Campaign events. Those are large gatherings, especially if the candidate is popular. I don't think Tulsi Gabbard is getting huge gatherings, but Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, they get huge gatherings. And both, all three candidates now have canceled rallies.
Well, that was significant with Bernie and Biden. I know Bernie has a last name and Biden has a first name, but those B's roll off the tongue pretty easily. But yes, they both canceled big rallies in Cleveland. Ohio, of course, is one of the key primaries on Tuesday. And President Trump, I mean, he was ready to talk about this rally he's planning for in Florida at the end of the month, but his top aides said, do not do this. This would be a big, big mistake. And so apparently he was convinced, they convinced him not to talk about any kind of Florida rally. He still hasn't ruled them out. He's still shaking hands without gloves, which is very ironic given the fact that the president is known to be a severe germaphobe, but yet he's still shaking hands. And there were pictures of him shaking hands with Doug Collins and Matt Gaetz and other Republicans who, as I said, have self-quarantined. Because of what happened at CPAC. So, you know, I understand that the president doesn't want the American people to panic. That's the last thing he wants, both as a candidate and as a president. But if he minimizes it, when you see these blaring headlines, I mean, I'm just looking at the front page of the Washington Post and the New York Times, and I'm sure it's every newspaper in the country, blaring headlines talking about pandemic and all the things. I mean, people, when baseball games are going to start to be canceled and the NBA canceled his season, that's when I think it starts to hit home a little even more, that it's not just, you know, alarmist talking. It's really affecting everybody. And again, it's just a frightening time.
All right. We'll try to put COVID-19 and coronavirus aside for the most part. We'll talk about the Democratic race for president, still a two-man race, but the question is for how much longer. We'll get to that when All Sides continues with the political junkie Ken Rudin here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking politics. We're trying to get away from coronavirus for a little while and talk just politics with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcast if you haven't already. It's definitely worth a listen. We are talking politics. First, I want to get one thing clear from the last hour where we talked about coronavirus. I do not lick my fingers before I get one of those vegetable bags at the grocery store. I sit there and I struggle with the bags, but I do not lick my fingers. Ken, do you lick your fingers before you take those bags at the grocery store?
You know something? I mean, that it sounds like a silly question, but when you're told not to touch your face,
you touch
I find
more.
Myself touching more because I'm aware of it. So it is a scary thing. And let me just say one thing, Mike, and I know we're not, you know, I think our audience knows what we're saying. We're not saying that politics should take precedent over the coronavirus. I think everybody knows how significant it is. And it, just like if this were a sports show, we would still be talking about sports scores, even though we're you know, we know what's going on with the virus. So, but unfortunately, as we pointed out, this is the virus itself is political, is part of the conversation, part of the political conversation. And I suspect that's going to be like that for as long as the virus lasts.
Okay, and don't lick your fingers as you cast a ballot next week.
But I will lick my fingers when you separate the bags at the supermarket. I don't know why I would do that. But.
All right, let's get to politics. It remains a two-man race for the Democratic nomination, but for how long? Bernie Sanders acknowledges his campaign is losing the electability argument, but he refuses to drop out of the race, not now anyway, not before taking on Joe Biden at least one more time in a debate.
Donald Trump must be defeated, and I will do everything in my power to make that happen. on Sunday night in the first one-on-one debate of this campaign. The American people will have the opportunity to see which candidate is best positioned to accomplish that goal.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, who did have a good night on Tuesday, seems to want to move past Bernie Sanders, but in a nice way.
And I want to thank Bernie Sanders and his supporters for their tireless energy and their passion. We share a common goal, and together we'll defeat Donald Trump. We'll defeat him together.
Ken Rudin, I think you and I both agree that we shouldn't be ruling anybody out. Let the voters decide. But it's becoming more and more of an uphill climb, to use the cliche, for Bernie Sanders.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I have never in my life of covering politics seen a more topsy-turvy race than I have this year. And especially, look, if you just go 2 weeks ago, we were writing Joe Biden's political obituary, having done poorly in Iowa, poorly in New Hampshire, finishing, I think, third in Nevada, a weak second in Nevada. And until South Carolina, we were saying, why is this guy the front runner? I don't understand it. And then he gets a huge win in South Carolina, a tremendous amount of African-American votes, which continues 3 days later in Super Tuesday. And it continued Tuesday in Michigan. I mean, Joe Biden won. This is a state that Bernie Sanders beat Hillary Clinton in 4 years ago. Joe Biden won every county in Michigan. He won every county in Missouri, in Mississippi. It was, I don't know if everybody loves Joe Biden. I don't know if everybody is afraid of Bernie Sanders. I do suspect that Democrats really desperately feel the need to defeat President Trump in November. And I think that's what Bernie Sanders alluded to, that we may not be winning the votes because of the electability argument. But Bernie Sanders still thinks that his ideological positions are winning the day. I don't see any evidence of that. And that's why he's looking forward to Sunday's debate in Phoenix.
He's even saying, Bernie Sanders is, that he's winning the generational argument. But young people have not been turning out as much as he has hoped or predicted. And even among those young people, fewer are voting for him than did in 2016.
You know something? First of all, there were so many things about the Bernie speech yesterday that bothered me. And I think the fact is he labeled it as a major event, so all the cable networks covered it live.
Yeah, we all thought
so
it was going to drop out.
Well, yeah, exactly, or whatever it was, but a major, major thing. I mean, he wasn't going to leave the Democratic Party because he's not even a member of the Democratic Party to begin with. But they all covered it live and basically said, I'm going to continue my battle. Now, I mean, that's, you know, it's a bait and switch thing that candidates do, and God bless. But the thing is that if this is about moving Joe Biden to the left, if it's about moving the Democratic Party to the left, well, Bernie Sanders has already done that. The things that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders and other Democrats are talking about would have been unheard of. I mean, for Barack Obama to say, absolutely not. But again, if the argument is that if Joe Biden's centrism or whatever, or in moderation, is the best way to beat Trump, and Bernie Sanders moves the party further and further to the left, you know that, look, the Trump campaign is going to call Biden a socialist, whether he's a left winger or not. So you know that's not going to go away. But you don't want to give away the store to Bernie Sanders because, one, there's no most important, there's no guarantee that his supporters will come along. I've seen so many references on social media from people who love Bernie Sanders said, if it's not Bernie, I'm sitting home in November. And I don't think that's a small group of people.
Do you think that happened a bit in 2016, happened quite a bit
in
2016.
It did.
And you hear it often in the heat of a primary campaign where somebody is so devoted to their candidate, and that candidate, perhaps the campaign gets nasty. I think you saw it in 2008 between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, that a lot of Hillary Clinton voters, when she finally bowed out of the nomination race, said, oh, I don't know if I can vote for him. But they come around. They fall in line. Do you see that happening should Bernie Sanders decide that Joe Biden is going to win the nomination and leave the race?
It's different with the Bernie Sanders supporter. This is I don't want to alienate Bernie Sanders supporters, and I don't think the Democratic Party wants to do that either, but they are so committed to Bernie Sanders and his philosophy that they feel anybody else is a sellout. I mean, polls show that even though Bernie Sanders did endorse Hillary Clinton, although it wasn't until July of 2016, but almost a quarter of his supporters did not. And there are so many reasons why Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, one reason being Hillary Clinton's campaign itself. But there are a lot of people, I don't think that any other candidate can claim this with their supporters, that these people, if it's not Bernie, forget about me in November. And that is alarming to a party that desperately wants to defeat Donald Trump.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, host of the Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 614-292-8513. You know,
Mike,
can I just say one quick thing?
We're talking about my podcast, but I think a lot of people would like to listen in this week. One of the guests is Neil Conan.
Oh,
and he talks about what's going on. You remember him.
Good friend of WOSU. You and Neil came to Columbus at least two or three times and did your
show from here.
Did live events with us. We have very fond memories of those events.
That's great. And Neil, and so Neil has a lot to say, and this is a very interesting show.
Is he Thanks still living in Hawaii?
He is. I tell him all the time, wait a second, Neil, you left me to run a nut farm? He owns a macadamia nut farm in Hawaii. And anybody who leaves Washington to run a nut farm somewhere else makes no sense to me.
Well, it's one and the same, right? It's an easy career transition.
That's correct.
You know, James Carville back in 1992, who was helping Bill Clinton get elected president, had a sign on the wall that said, "It's the economy, stupid." Listening to Joe Biden and listening to his speeches, it sounds like he has a sign on his wall saying, "It's defeat Trump, stupid." That's basically all he's doing. I'm the guy who can beat Trump, and that's the message he keeps hammering home. Is that correct?
Well, there's truth to that. You know, Joe Biden had a great line. I think it was in 2008 when Rudy Giuliani was running for president, and he described the Giuliani campaign as a noun, a verb, and 9/11. And that always got a lot of laughs because that basically was Giuliani's campaign. For the most part of this year, the focus of Joe Biden's campaign was Barack Obama. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a sentence where he didn't mention Barack Obama's name. But the fact is that now that he thinks maybe he could stand on his own, I don't know. But the fact is that because most Democrats do see him as the vehicle for getting the Democrats back into the White House, his focus certainly is on Donald Trump and not Bernie Sanders. Whereas Bernie Sanders, if you look at him, almost any posting he has, any ad he has, it's all about Joe Biden and the establishment and the billionaires who support him.
Speaking of the establishment, of course, this turnaround was fueled by the quick withdrawals and even quicker endorsement of Joe Biden by Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Mike Bloomberg, even after Super Tuesday. Andrew Yang is now endorsing Joe.
Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. Exactly right, yeah.
Is that natural in politics, or did those withdrawals and endorsements happen more quickly this time than they have in cycles past?
I think it happened more quickly, and I think one of the reasons, and again, I can't speak for the Democratic Party, but it seems like after Bernie Sanders had a basic tie in Iowa, he won New Hampshire, won big in Nevada, there was a lot of fears in the Democratic Party establishment, for better or worse, that Bernie Sanders was going to be the nominee and was going to lead the party to defeat. Now, of course, his supporters will say, no, he will bring out new voters. But, Mike, as you pointed out earlier, that hasn't happened in the primary so far. So I think a lot of these endorsements were, I mean, look, everybody likes Joe Biden. He's a nice guy and everything. But I think a lot of it was fear of Bernie. I think a lot of them felt that if you're going to not only beat President Trump, but keep the House and perhaps pick up the Senate, you need somebody like a Joe Biden at the top of the ticket and not somebody who might frighten voters away. Again, I don't mean to sound harsh about Bernie Sanders because he brings so much to the table, but I think the feeling in the Democratic Party was that a revolution could start with perhaps slower going with Biden in the White House rather than a sudden jolt to the left that Bernie Sanders would bring.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's go to those phones. Cynthia from Hilliard, you're on the air with Ken Rudin, the political junkie.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to you say that more of the Hillary supporters voted for Obama in 2008 than did Bernie supporters vote for Hillary in 2016.
No, we said that.
Yeah, go ahead. But go ahead, Cynthia. What's your point?
Oh, okay. Well, I was just going to say that was not the case, that more Bernie supporters did vote for Hillary in 2016 than did her supporters vote for Obama in 2008.
I want you to stay on the line, Cynthia, because I have a question to ask you. But is that the case? Do you have any information on that?
I do know. That is still questionable. But I think part of the reason, and this is, I have seen numbers that up to one quarter of Bernie Sanders supporters didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. But I think the difference with 2016 was the feeling was there was no way Clinton was going to lose. I mean, there's no way that Donald Trump was going to win. And so it was easier, I think, perhaps for some Democrats to sit home because Hillary Clinton wasn't the perfect candidate, because she was too establishment on too many things and afraid to take risks because of her email. I mean, you know, the emails we heard ad nauseum. But I think it's different this time. I think it's more dangerous for the Democrats, for Bernie Sanders to sit home, because if they really believe that there's no difference between Trump and Biden, if they really believe that Joe Biden would bring a Kavanaugh or a Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, Then I suspect that the Democratic Party is doomed. But I have not seen numbers about the Hillary supporters who didn't vote for Obama. But I really think that the animus between Hillary and Bernie in 2016 was much more pronounced than it was between the top two Democrats in 2008.
Cynthia, I'm just guessing you're a Bernie Sanders supporter. Am I wrong?
I am. I am a supporter.
So what are your feelings right now? Are you still optimistic that he can come back? He's not that far behind in the delegate count, but the states ahead would seem to indicate a hard road. Are you optimistic he could come back? And if he doesn't come back, would you support Joe Biden?
I absolutely believe that he can come back. This is obviously a result of all of the establishment coalescing and coming against them. I mean, you go back and you look at videos from just a few months ago, all of the presidential candidates were talking about Joe Biden's problems with his cognitive abilities, right? And suddenly, oh, we're endorsing him. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the back rooms that we're not privy to. And I think a lot of it has to do with the mainstream media framing things in a certain way. Like, Ken, you just refer to this as the revolution, right?
Let me ask you real quick, Cynthia, would you support Joe Biden if Bernie Sanders is not the nominee? Yes or no?
Absolutely, because I don't want Donald Trump in there for another 4 years. When you say that people think Biden is another Trump, that's not correct. We absolutely know he's not another Trump, but he will continue a lot of the same mainstream kinds of policies that have been in place, right?
Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you for your call, Cynthia. We really appreciate your perspective. Have a good day. Mm-hmm. Ken, your reaction to that?
Yeah, I wish that Cynthia could stay on the phone for an hour because, one, I appreciate the civility of the conversation because I've had conversations with Bernie supporters who have just, been very, very angry. But two, I mean, yes, there is a path for Bernie Sanders to win the nomination. But right now, it looks like the delegate count is Biden 864, Bernie 710. On Tuesday the 17th, you have Florida, Illinois, and Ohio, three gigantic delegate states that all look like they're going heavily for Joe Biden. The following week is Georgia with its big African-American constituency will also be going for Biden. And since 1992, no Democrat who has won the majority of the African-American vote has failed to win the nomination. That was Bernie's problem in 2016 against Hillary. And I think as we saw in South Carolina and the southern states on Super Tuesday, that is a big problem again this year. I would not like to think that the black voters are suddenly part of the establishment because that seems a bit much for us. But you're absolutely right, though. Cynthia is right that the establishment and the establishment media do want Joe Biden, even though, let's for the record, the New York Times endorsed Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren. And where are they today?
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. Looking back quickly, and we'll get to, maybe after the break, we'll look at ahead to the Ohio's primary and the other states that are voting on Tuesday. But looking back briefly at this past Big Tuesday, they called it. It wasn't Super Tuesday, it was Big Tuesday. I don't know what this coming Tuesday is, just Tuesday, I guess, St. Patty's Day.
Tuesday Weld, or
Michigan, that was the big prize. Bernie Sanders surprised everybody 4 years ago by beating Hillary Clinton there. Did not do as well, not nearly as well this time around. Have voters in Michigan changed, Ken, in 4 years?
Well, the cast of characters have certainly changed. And I wonder if a lot of the closeness of, look, Bernie Sanders definitely had an appeal in 2016, similar to what Donald Trump had, not because they were similar ideologically, but they were not the status quo candidates. Hillary Clinton was definitely a status quo candidate. But again, the difference was back then is that Hillary Clinton was clearly going to win. There was not great enthusiasm for him. And I suspect that the real enthusiasm this year may not be for Joe Biden. They may have a nominee that they like, but they're not excited about, but they are very excited or determined for a different result in November.
Can you read anything out of the primary results that can forecast what's going to happen in Michigan in November? Of course, Donald Trump won Michigan barely, but he won it, and that was one of the keys to his winning the election.
Well, that's a good point. First of all, you know, Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, got more votes in Michigan and Wisconsin than the difference between Trump and Hillary Clinton. We know that Hillary Clinton didn't even campaign in Wisconsin after the convention, which was a serious mistake. She didn't do campaign outside of the urban centers in Pennsylvania either. And I think there's just more, look, I think both sides are revved up for what's going to be a very high turnout campaign in November, assuming the virus does not continue. I guess, you know, whoever side is more determined to win, more energized will come out. I mean, we always say that, you know, the only poll that matters is on voting day at the voting booth, and that's true. But there seems to be, if you're looking at the suburban areas, especially in Michigan, the numbers in 2020 were far outstripped those in 2016. And I think part of it is the determination to beat Trump in November.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're sprinkling in health tips. A person called in and said, if you want to get those produce bags separated, use the moisture on the produce to help to wet your fingers to open those bags. So we're here with these health tips to keep you healthy.
That's important.
Politics and pandemics.
And also, yeah.
All right.
And I'm just wondering if maybe the answer in the next coming primaries, the answer is voting by absentee ballot or vote very early in the day when there are no crowds.
Washington votes by mail. You know,
I saw a headline that said there's all male voting in Washington. I think women should have the right to vote as well. I think that's unfair and something should be done about that. Because I, in my heart, I'm kind of a feminist.
There you go. Suffragist, yeah. Ken Rudin.
Suffering.
More suffering when we continue here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. Our guest, we're glad to have him back, Ken Rudin, host of the Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, our resident political junkie. You hear him often here on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking primary politics, sprinkling in a little health tips about ways to avoid coronavirus, but mainly for the next 15, 20 minutes, we'll talk about politics. The Ohio primary, of course, is just a few days away, along with Florida and Illinois. Three big states, three big prizes between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Let's go to the phones, and let's go to Jason on line five. Jason, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, man? Hey, thanks for taking the call. Hey, I want to make a point on here. I haven't really heard too much, but everybody's going all nuts about Biden winning these states that are not going to matter in the general election, you know, like Mississippi or something. Obviously, that's going to go Republican no matter what. But then when you look at Bernie winning states like obviously California and, you know, states maybe on the East Coast we haven't even had yet that are really going to matter during the, you know, during the general election. And then the other part is guys like me, I mean, I'm a Trump supporter, but I also was a Bernie supporter before I was a Trump supporter. And I think that, you know, a lot of people aren't appreciating that there's a lot of guys that would probably switch over to Bernie if he got it, because there's some kind of connection there that they both share. I guess you'd call it populism or something. But those are the two points I wanted to make. But I'll take your guys' analysis off the air.
Great. Thank you, Jason. Ken, I have heard that a lot, especially from Republicans, that, you know, yeah, Trump's winning Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi.
You mean Biden?
I mean Biden. I'm sorry. Biden is winning Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, but he's not going to win that in the general, so big deal.
Well, you could make the case that it doesn't matter what Democrat won the primary in California, even though it was Bernie Sanders, because whatever Democrat is the nominee, he'll win California as well. There's truth to that. Look, when obviously Mississippi and Tennessee and states like that and South Carolina are not key states in November. That's absolutely true. But Michigan is. Missouri is.
Minnesota.
The fact that Joe, I'm sorry?
Minnesota even.
Well, actually, Minnesota was closer than people think. Even though it hasn't voted for a Republican for president since Reagan in 1984. No, I'm sorry, since Nixon in 72. They even voted for Mondale in 84. So it's been since 1972 the last time Minnesota voted for a Republican for president, but it has been close. But the fact is, like, for example, we keep talking about the changing demographics in Texas. And Joe Biden did very well in Texas, better than anybody thought. So if there's an energized black turnout for Joe Biden, of course, it'll never equal what it was for Obama in 2008 and 2012. But if it is a big energized turnout for Biden, then states that Trump won in 2016, like Wisconsin, like Michigan, like Pennsylvania, perhaps even Florida, are up for grabs. And so that's that argument.
292-8513, area code 614, if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. There is a debate Sunday, correct?
That's right, in Phoenix.
In Phoenix. Who's carrying it? I forget which channel is carrying it. Do you know?
CNN
is carrying it. It's the last, it could be the last time, depending on what happens in future primaries, that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders face off. It's just those two now. It's a very different dynamic. What do you expect to see during the debate on Sunday?
Well, it was interesting, especially interesting listening to Bernie Sanders yesterday, because he basically outlined what he will take to the argument against Joe Biden. While Bernie Sanders did not attack Biden in his comments yesterday, he did say where the two of them differ. And he almost gave Biden a debate tutorial about what's going to happen on Sunday. One thing I thought was very interesting and probably unfortunate, when Jim Clyburn, the African-American congressman from South Carolina, who is the highest ranking black official in Congress, he's, I think, the number three Democrat in Congress. He announced early on Tuesday, or while the voting was going on, that it's over, Biden wins, they should cancel all the future debates. If Biden is going to win over Bernie Sanders and his supporters to his side for the November battle, the last thing you want is people like Jim Clyburn and others changing the rules, announcing changing the rules to keep end the debates prematurely. Look, if it's scheduled, keep it going. You don't cancel the primaries. You don't cancel the debates because you know, until one candidate gets 1,991 delegates, it's still going on. Now,
especially this cycle. I mean, it's been so unpredictable. You need to wait, play this out.
Absolutely. The one thing that helps Bernie Sanders is that, and this was a gift to him, they changed the rules and made the superdelegates, which clearly do not support who do not support Bernie Sanders. The superdelegates, the 771 superdelegates, cannot vote unless the convention goes to a second ballot, and that's not going to happen because a one-on-one race, somebody will obviously have a majority.
The debate will not have spectators because of coronavirus. What does that do to the vibe in the hall?
Well, you know something, that's a good question because I mean, again, to put the coronavirus in political terms, and of course, it's far more important and significant than that, but I think it does hurt Bernie Sanders. One, at rallies, look, people don't get excited about Joe Biden. Let's be honest here. You know, nice guy, but, you know, everybody waits for the gaffe. That last speech he gave after a big Tuesday where he confused his wife and his sister. I mean, that was played to, you know, forever and ever. But now, Bernie Sanders.
He said they were they were lined up incorrectly behind him.
But the look on Jill Biden's face was just
here
so
we go
precious.
Again.
It was like, here we go again.
You can see the memes in his dreams right there.
Oh, yeah, my God. I mean, on my show today, I play that, and then I play something from Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David music. Like, it's just, yeah. What is going on here? But Bernie Sanders does have a stronger, although he got booed at the last debate, I think he did get booed, come to think of it. So I don't know if a lack of an audience hurts or helps Bernie, but I certainly think that the lack of rallies does hurt Bernie because he does pack them in. He does have more donors than any other candidate. And again, when he has a rally, it's pretty hoopering and hollering. I don't know if hoopering is the word, but it is now.
We know what you mean. Quarantining, yes. I never knew was a verb until this week.
No, exactly.
But do you expect...
Self-quarantining.
Do you expect... Bernie Sanders to go scorched earth in this debate, or do you expect him to be measured?
I just don't. I keep thinking about 2016, where there was definitely animus between the two of them, and he didn't endorse until mid of July, well after the primaries were over. He didn't endorse Hillary Clinton until July of 2016. But I think given the fact that, look, if Joe Biden is in a sweep, I mean, he has a chance of, you know, winning not only Illinois, Florida, Ohio, but maybe Arizona as well, although Arizona could be a good Bernie Sanders state because of the Latino vote. But if he does really well, Biden does on the 17th, the following week in Georgia, I don't see, you know, I keep thinking what Cynthia said earlier in the conversation, that she still has hope for Bernie Sanders. I just don't see it. And I mean, already 62% of the delegates have been picked. I just don't see it. So I kind of think it won't be a scorched earth policy of Biden. Of Bernie.
Of Bernie, yeah.
You have Bernie Sanders, although his supporters may see it differently.
At the very least, he wants to just, again, remind Joe Biden and the public of what he truly believes in, what he thinks the country needs. Because it is never too early to speculate, we are going to go to Mark from Columbus on line one, who's been waiting patiently. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, longtime fan of Ken Rudin.
Thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. Great. I saw something on the internet yesterday, speculation that the Biden campaign is already developing a short list for vice presidential nominees. And on top of that short list is our very own John Kasich, of all people, because Biden wants to do something extraordinary with the vice presidency slot. I'm wondering what Mr. Rudin thoughts were on that. Would that be a good move for Biden, and would it be a good move for Kasich to accept it?
Thanks for your call, Mark.
That would be a disaster for both parties. I always think of, you know, John McCain seriously wanted Joe Lieberman as his running mate in 2008. Of course, he picked some woman by the name of Sarah Palin, who nobody ever heard of. That would have been a disaster as well at the convention. Joe Lieberman being a pro-choice candidate at a Republican convention, my goodness, you don't do that. This would be, first of all, if Joe Biden has any hope of holding on to Bernie Sanders supporters in November, which could be crucial, picking a conservative like John Kasich would just be yikes. I mean, it would be so yikes. It would be just terrible. And Kasich, who apparently still has presidential aspirations, I mean, until the primaries began, we weren't sure if he was going to run again, challenge the president. Of course, it would have gone nowhere. But I think Kasich still has plans to run again, if assuming Donald Trump ever leaves office. And I think that would be a disaster for both sides. But I think as far as the speculation goes, it is a fair a conversation to have now about who the vice presidential nominee
It seems
will
those
be.
Democrats were racing to wrap their arms around Joe Biden, and you have to wonder if part of that is to try to win favor as he considers his nominee. Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, that has to play a role.
Well, Stacey Abrams, who hasn't endorsed yet, but of course she is openly campaigning for vice president, which you usually don't do. But that's why it's so significant. Joe Biden will be, what, 78 at the convention or at the election? Nobody has ever, that old has ever been elected. And just like the concern about John McCain when he picked Sarah Palin, somebody that old, again, I'm not playing the age, you know, but, you know, Bernie Sanders.
It's reality. Let's face it. It's reality.
It's reality. Yeah. Bernie Sanders had a heart attack. He hasn't released all his medical reports. Joe Biden also getting up there. And so who the running mate will be is very, very significant. We always say it never really matters. You know, Walter Mondale picked Geraldine Ferraro. Everybody was so excited. And Mondale Ferraro lost 49 states to Ronald Reagan in 1984. But this one is significant. And given the fact that women do feel, and especially with Elizabeth Warren's ending, that there was a lot of sexism, misogyny in the campaign, a lot of that criticism was legitimate. One would think that you'd have to have a woman on the ticket, if not an African-American woman. And so you think of people like Stacey Abrams and Kamala Harris, but there's Klobuchar, there's Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. There's, as I said, Kamala Harris, who, of course, you don't have to wrap up California, but you might do well, you know, you might ensure a bigger black turnout at the polls. But VP is very significant.
Ken Rudin just.
But it won't be, and it will not be John Kasich.
No, no, I think we can take that one to the bank. Not John Kasich, not John Kerry, not Mitt Romney.
Not John Kerry. No, not Tom Eagleton.
Ken Rudin, just a couple of minutes left here on 89.7 NPR News. Getting to Joe Biden's gaffes, we mentioned it a minute ago. Have we turned a corner on those? I mean, Trump changes the rules, I think, as far as acceptable behavior on the campaign trail. I mean, he can get away with anything. There's no such thing as a gaffe with Donald Trump.
Right,
there's no such
thing
as a lie with Donald Trump. It's just alternate facts. I think that I almost think that Joe Biden's gaffes, as long as they're not totally, you know, crazy, are almost endearing and make him look human. If he were to take, be self-deprecating about them.
Yeah, I used to think that Uncle Joe with his gaffes is kind of endearing, but of course, you know, the rubbing of the shoulders, the kissing of the neck, that, you know,
you can't do that
in the Me Too Harvey Weinstein area.
In the coronavirus era, to be honest.
Well, there's that too. You just don't do those things. So I don't know how endearing it is, but I just think it's just so funny how Donald Trump will go after Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, for, you know, some kind of financial misdeeds, when God knows what his children are doing with the amount of money they're making off their father's presidency. So you're absolutely right. Trump does what he does and gets away with a lot of it, and the Republican electorate stays with him. I think the Democrats are not that tolerant of that, and Joe Biden desperately needs to. I mean, you know, he's a lovable guy, and God bless him, but you gotta... You gotta not fall victim to Joe being Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I think serious errors of fact or things like that will cost him. But, you know, mixing up his wife and his sister because they stood in different spots on the podium, I don't think that really will cost him.
Right, but didn't he say he was arrested protesting apartheid in South Africa with Nelson Mandela, and of course that never happened.
Yeah, that's...
You don't want to embellish stories like that. That got Hillary Clinton into trouble as well. The fire she took when she landed somewhere that never happened. So you just don't do that.
Keep it simple. Of course, they're not going to be interacting much with crowds these days because of the coronavirus, it sounds like.
I don't know how long this lasts, but that'll be interesting if it goes on through the summer. Obviously, you have the two conventions coming up in Milwaukee and Charlotte. And my goodness, I mean, people saying, well, maybe you cancel the election. My goodness. I mean, look, we had an election during the Civil War. We had an election in 1944 in the middle of World War II. I don't see them canceling an election, certainly, but the rules of voting and the process of voting may change if this virus extends its life cycle to later in the year.
Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, thanks for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ken, it's just, do you remember the Congress impeached the president not that long ago? And where we have come so far and what's next is the big question.
Do you remember when you were licking your fingers at the supermarket? So many things are changing.
Please don't.
Thank you, Mike.
Don't lick your fingers at the supermarket. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands.
And don't run with scissors.
Don't run with scissors. Keep that 6 feet away from the folks, especially if you're running with scissors. Thanks very much, Ken Rudin from Ken Rudin's Political Junkie Podcast. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann on 89.7 NPR News.